So I asked him, I say, would you do a school for working class people? And I got an answer back. I'd think myself daft to try. So I said to myself, right, that's what we're going to do.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm 84 years old. I've had a number of careers as a nurse, a pediatric nurse, mother of five. I am a teacher. Then I started the free school in Albany, New York, in the U.S., and led it or co-led it from 1971, I guess, to 1996, and I've been a midwife, and I've trained a midwife who works very successfully in our school's Family Life Center. We have a birthing center we call Matrix that has its own pool and makes connections with doctors in the region. I started editing and publishing a little quarterly journal in 1985 called Scole, the Journal of Alternative Education, which ran for 14 years. And then in 1994, we started a group of us, I think six altogether, co-editors, started a quarterly we call the Journal of Family Life, which in its last few years changed the name to Journal for Living and was praised very highly by different publications that, you know, evaluate journals and so on. I'm a desktop publisher now, and I've got 14 titles. I'm right in the middle of publishing two books at the moment. I'm retired, and I'm living in a little hill town in western Massachusetts, and the school is still carrying on very nicely without me. What we discovered in the years of the school, and it's we've just had an international conference last summer and a second one this summer, the ideas that we used are really beginning to catch on very nicely. It's somewhat like Summerhill, except that Neil, I used to correspond with Neil. He would always answer, but, you know, with a one-liner ordinarily. That's A.S. Neil, who founded Summerhill and ran it for many, many years. So I asked him, I say, would you do a school for working class people? And I got an answer back. I'd think myself daft to try. So I said to myself, right, that's what we're going to do. Well, I wanted to anyway, because I've always been drawn to the inner city and black people and so on. So it's a maximally diverse population. It's just naturally, we don't select anyone, any kid whose parents let him come and visit for a week, and then he says, I want to go to this school. We say, sure. We've never turned anybody away. We've never had a waiting list. We just take whoever comes. So that I'd say it's pretty well divided in terms of the neighborhood kids between black and Hispanic with a few Oriental. At any rate, the school is pretty much a democratic school as it's defined now by the International Democratic Schools Conference people. The children get to do as they wish. We don't have as much of a formal curriculum going on, as Neil always did, where the kids could come or not as they chose. But education itself, I think, is different. When I visited Summerhill a couple of times, it seemed to me that the academic aspect of Summerhill was rather boring. And our kids find it very exciting because they, as much as anything else, because of computers, they jump right in on computers very early on and teach themselves reading and writing. And then Chris, who runs the school now, Chris Micoliano, is a mathematician, so that's all right. So they get the 3 R's fine. But one of the unique things, which I adapted from Summerhill's meeting, that is where decision-making is made at Summerhill, our kids go only up until ninth grade. That's our state-defined mandate, and then they move on to high school. Because only these very senior kids would have gotten to do all that much in the way of decision-making, what I did was to set up another system after a few tries to solve problems. The idea being that children really needed to take responsibility for their own problem-solving, and it's much better done on a peer level than with adults. You know, they'll run to the adults and say, yeah, so-and-so hit me, and this kind of thing, and you know, there's no need for it. So what we did was to set up what we call a council meeting system, whereby any child at any time, that is, who belongs to the main school, not just the preschool. The preschool has an area of its own. No matter what is going on, that kid is entitled to run through the school yelling, council meeting, and that takes precedence over anything, including curriculum. And the kids, they've voted it in as a mandatory service, and sometimes, I think twice in the 30-some years of the school, it's been voted out, but very, very seldom. The kids all come together, and we use Robert's Rules of Order, parliamentary procedure, you know. The kids elect a chairman, never an adult. The kids always vote for the chairman who's going to run a tight ship, because they don't like to have to hang out solving people's problems for, you know, several hours. They want it to work efficiently, so they'll pick the kid who knows how to keep order. And they did vote in, after I left, they voted in a provision that the chairman can relegate an obstreperous kid who won't listen to the corner for a while, and that seemed to work very well. The new kids come in on the whole thing very surprisingly rapidly and thrive on it because their needs get addressed very seriously with the council meeting. We use rules of evidence, we use witnessing, and the interesting thing is that when you trace any of these problems back far enough, very often it turns out that the kid who was the initial aggressor came in to school that morning wiped out or bummed out or angry or scared because of something that had been going on at home during the night. And the kids, you know, are tremendously supportive of each other. They move very quickly now through this issue of blaming into fact-finding what really happened, and the new ones learn to trust quite readily. So it's a brilliant system.
I expect to be treated right when you don't do right yourself. I expect to be treated right, baby, and you don't do right yourself. If you don't give it, baby, you won't have to take it from nobody else. Learn to treat other people as you'd want them to treat you. Learn to treat other people like you would want them to treat you. Lord, when you mistreat your friend, somebody sure will mistreat you. Good Lord made us all, didn't nobody make themselves. Good Lord made us all, didn't none of us make ourselves. Gal, I'm giving you this message, and you can give it to somebody else. Now get a smile on your face and keep it there every day. Get a smile on your face, baby, and keep it there every day. Now, if you treat everybody right, they will all treat you the same way.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
Unschooling? I think we are an unschool, basically. I mean, that's Matt Hearn's term. You know, he never saw any difference when he was here visiting. It's a matter of what term you choose to use, really. It's a question of finding out what works for you with your kids. And I think schools need to be totally individual and adapted to what the parents and the kids work out to do together. And as long as it works, that's the important thing.
I was thinking of, like, you know, John Holt's Growing Without School.
Yeah. Well, John and I didn't see eye to eye, but then he never came and visited our school. He became very anti-school for perfectly good reasons. He saw too many middle-class, rural alternative schools that catered to the parents that already had options, and he saw what happened to kids in the public schools, and he never put those two things together. He just had a personal experience of homeschooling, which was brilliant, and it worked. It worked beautifully. I think homeschooling, I was very skeptical in the beginning, but I'm a believer. You know, I would never discourage parents from unschooling or whatever their own kids. It's important that children understand as early as they can discover it that it's okay for them to be in this world, that they are important within themselves. That's a prerequisite. Secondly, as Neil pointed out endlessly, but very few people got it, freedom implies and involves responsibility for your acts. If you are free to act, then you have to own up to what happens as a result of what you are free to do. Do you see? So, in other words, your freedom must not impose on the freedom of other people. That's the second ingredient. The third ingredient is that if children have a lot of freedom to roam, to move out of doors, I mean, even here in Toronto in the winter, you know, there's tobogganing and skating and skiing and so on, and we do a lot of that in the winter. I mean, not so much skating and skiing as there are wonderful little hills right by the school, so even the smallest kids can sled or toboggan. We go out, there's a nature preserve out in the Helderberg Mountains to the west of Albany, and the kids have spent quite a bit of time there. They're wonderful with children, introducing them to species and so on. And kids who have freedom in their lives are naturally affectionate toward creatures in the wild and curious about plants and trees and birds and so on. Our kids have always been very supportive of people who care about the environment. There was a guy in our New York State Environmental Department of Environmental Conservation, I think it's called, Ward Stone, who was second in command, and he blew the whistle on the slack behavior, the pro-business slant of the environmental people and how little they were doing for the environment. And the head of the department fired him summarily, and our kids got so outraged because Ward had been with them out in the nature preserve. They collected a huge armful of wildflowers and took them to him and called the TV stations and presented him with the award, and all stood around and cheered him, and the media were all there, and they, you know, raised such a ruckus that Ward was reinstated. And so, you know, it isn't a problem. When kids are comfortable within themselves and with each other and enjoy what they're doing, it just naturally, given an opportunity, it extends to the environment. And they're all activists, they're natural activists. And it continues after they get to high school, and those who want to go on to college and graduate. One of our kids who graduated a year ago, has just taken over an Italian language church just down the hill from our school that had been abandoned. The diocese let it go, and nobody was able to resurrect it. She's got it going as a community center, and our kids just love to jump in. They raise thousands of dollars. I mean, 2 years ago, they raised the money to go to an international democratic schools conference in New Zealand, and so this is a child's play, you know. It's like concern for the environment. Spirituality grows naturally. Children are loving creatures, and everything grows out of pleasure and enjoyment of their lives and wanting to expand, you know. And there's no formal teaching that really is needed. I mean, kids vying for the privilege of grabbing one of the handles of our great, huge cooking pot that has had all the scraps from lunch scraped into it, you know, and they want to feed the hens. This is the love of animals is a prerequisite among small children for having spiritual sensitivity, as far as I'm concerned. And when they become adolescent, they just expand their horizons in whatever way they choose. And there's another reason not to intervene with parents. Children will gravitate in the direction that their parents themselves have gravitated. And if there is no spiritual background there, the children will find one to go to on their own. It's just being treated with love and kindness and a lot of singing, you know, and dancing. Instead of providing them with textual experiences or formalized experiences, we'll take them to visit, well, like the cathedral up at the top of the hill. The kids are just awe-stricken when they walk in. So that kind of thing on an experiential level, sure, but not in a formalized manner.
I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
Purple Panthers, we ran for about a year and a half, and we're working locally in the town of Ashfield. And then a younger woman who's uptight personally, in her early 50s, I'd say, wanted to join. So we said, sure. And she said, this is totally inappropriate. You just need to dissolve this entirely. This is no good. We need to be called the Ashfield Senior Council. So there is no Purple Panthers anymore, except my website, which is an advocacy website for women and for midwifery, for older people, stuff like that. I've collected a lot of pretty good stuff, you know, that people can use for support. If somebody writes me an email and orders, I have all the back issues of SCOLE, the Journal of Alternative Education, for $4 each, and I have four volumes of anthology called Challenging the Giant, which is about 500 pages each of articles and so on drawn from SCOLE that people can buy, and they're only $14.95 each, but if you buy all four, it's only $40 altogether plus shipping, I think $5 shipping. So I think they're pretty good buys. Then I also have an index of the journals online at spinningglobe.net, spinningglobe.net. And so you just look for SCOLE Index, and I think you'll find it.
Book review.
My name's Evelina Kay, and I'm gonna talk about Nancy Drew, and the Hardy Boys, and C.S. Lewis, and Lord of the Rings. Right now I'm reading Nancy Drew, and the one I just finished before I started my next one, which is The Whispering Statue, I was reading The Haunted Showboat, and they said nigger in it. I didn't like that, because I'm not white-skinned, and even if I was, I wouldn't like it. And it was a library book, so I couldn't scribble in it over the nigger parts, but at least they weren't meaning really any offense. They were just like using that word instead of saying African or something else, and they weren't really making them the bad one, like the ones that were doing all the thievery and robbery and everything. Last time when I was reading this Hardy Boy book, The Secret of the Lost Tunnel, I stopped reading it because it said nigger in it. And I wasn't sure who was a suspicious person, and I thought it was the person they called nigger, so I didn't like it. I could probably fund that one again and then read it anyway and just scribble in it and all the nigger parts and write Matt instead. I couldn't do that with a library book. I had to say it instead. I just said it out loud and hit that part that said nigger. It's still like an insult to people. No one likes to read it in books. Probably the time it was made. Books sometimes, like when you read a book, then it just has the time and the author that read it. Most of the Nazi Drew books don't say nigger. It's just that one.
So that means that, you know, when you read these books that has a word like nigger in it, like maybe in Tom Sawyer or C.S. Lewis, right?
He says darky. But then it was just the dwarfs because they didn't believe in Aslan anymore.
So when you read books that have that stereotype people or insult them by using a derogatory name like nigger or darky or something like that, does that make you feel like not wanting to read the book anymore?
Well, not always. Just the Hardy Boy book I didn't read. The rest of them I always read, but because I'm so, when it was in the Nancy Drew book, then I was so far into it, and it was getting too exciting to stop. I always slapped that part, and I actually scribbled over top of it before remembered it was a library book and having to erase it with my super duper eraser.
Is there any book that you might have read that has a non-white person in it that's going to be like the main character?
I don't really know, I don't think so, but I haven't read that many books, I'm only 8.5, and I'll probably find some. And I think I read The Hobbit when I was rereading it to Madeline, and I think I read that hobbits have brownish skin, and Frodo's the main character, so that's sort of good. And Lord of the Rings is good, because it never says anything nasty about black people. It's called black people, but why? It's like brown. It never really talked too much about skin color. Or hands, and that was good because I'm left-handed. And in Harry Potter, I can't play Harry when I play games very well because he's right-handed and it said so in the book. So it's harder for me to play because he uses his wand in the book.
So would you like to see a story written about a girl of color who's left-handed?
Well, it doesn't have to be necessarily a girl of color. You can be any color. It doesn't matter, really.
No, but we just to make a balance, right?
I like Eowyn as well. Frodo and Eowyn are the ones I act in that game. And I play games. But I make them my own way, because I like playing them my own way, because I never want Frodo to go over the sea or Eowyn to stop fighting. And I don't like playing the part where, like, Frodo's in Mordor. I like playing it more when he's having adventures.
With Nancy Drew, they complain about the emphasis on always on her looks. They don't say the Hardy Boys are handsome, do they?
I think they do. Well, they tell everyone how they look. They describe Nancy as well. They're pretty much, like, sort of, like, more the same, those kind of books.
But the good thing about Nancy, I guess, maybe, is that they emphasise her skills. And...
Mm-hmm. And she's a girl. They never say which hand she is, but I think, from what I've read, I think she's right-handed.
I think she's always out to defend, to get people their money, right? To save people's money, right?
Not really. Not always.
Books, the inheritance order.
No, she. No, Mummy, you don't understand. You haven't read The Secret of Redgate Farm, have you?
No, I haven't.
Well, that one, there's this girl that's really poor. Mm-hmm. But and she just needed a little money because there wasn't even enough money to hold up like the farm. They were going to lose the farm. They didn't have enough money. Even.
I mean, all Nancy Drew's books are around. Mostly around them.
Getting a little money.
Yeah.
Well, if you're poor, what don't you need a little bit?
Yeah, you do.
Like those people, like in, mm-hmm. Redgate, in the mystery, and like the Secret of Redgate Farm, they needed money.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you one thing: Lord of the Rings is my favorite book, and always will be. I read it when I was six. Mummy read it to me anyway. Mm-hmm. I love it. Maybe it's adventure. I like stories. Adventure. That's what makes me like Nancy Drew.
Freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train is leaving in the morning. Everybody get on board. Try with me now. The freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train. Leaving in the morning, the freedom train. It's leaving in the morning. Everybody get on board. Now, lots of people in history, today history, and history of the past have contributed to freedom in some way or another. Even comedians, in their own way, have done this also. Who could name me just one person? Who has done something in the area of freedom?
Harriet Tubman.
Harriet Tubman, and she's a woman in Black history. The freedom train carries Harriet Tubman. The freedom train carries Harriet Tubman. The freedom train carries Harriet Tubman. Everybody get on board. Who can name me another person in history? Could be a president, could be a poet, could be anyone. Yes?
Flip Wilson,
and the freedom train carries Flip Wilson. The freedom train carries Flip Wilson. The freedom train carries Flip Wilson. Everybody get on board. Who knows another woman who's done something in history or was doing something today? Yes?
Jane Addams,
sorry. The freedom train carries Jane Addams. The freedom train carries Jane Addams. The freedom train carries Jane Addams. Everybody get on board. The freedom train is leaving in the morning.
The freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train is leaving in the morning.
Betsy Ross. Betsy Ross.
The freedom train is carrying Betsy Ross. The freedom train carries Betsy Ross. The freedom train carries Betsy Ross. Everybody get on board.
Well, I like to name some people myself that I feel they're very, very important in Black history. And this man certainly gave his life in a way for freedom, and his name is Dr. Martin Luther King. Alright?
Oh, yes.
Alright. And you can see, you can always look up and see what this man has done. A lot of the people that we've named here. Alright.
Freedom train carries Dr. Martin Luther King. Everybody get on board.
train carries Christmas eggs. The freedom train carries Christmas eggs. The freedom train carries Christmas eggs. Everybody get on board.
Last time, well, the freedom train is leaving in the morning.
The freedom train is leaving in the morning. The freedom train is leaving in the morning. Everybody get on board.
Repeat that. Yes, everybody
get on board.
And there are lots and lots of other people that you should look up on your own. Everybody get on board.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.